addressing you as friends. But I now see that we have realized that we are all brothers and sisters in God. We are all children of light. Most of us here have been able to have a glimpse of the light of God which is controlling all universe. Truth is one. So whoever realized truth or became the mouthpiece of the truth, they always gave out the same thing. In the man body that we have got, which is considered to be the highest in all creation, the highest aim is to know the truth. So you can have the experience of truth when you rise above body consciousness and come in contact with that. That truth is clothed in light. The music of the all harmonies is emanating from the truth. Those are fortunate to have the good fortune to have a contact with that. That seed has been sown that will bear forth fruit. The only thing remains that we live up to that truth. Our Master used to say, if you take some pills or laxative pills, whether you take it by error or knowingly, they'll give you motion. Similarly, whatever experience of truth has been given up to you, if you live by it knowingly or unknowingly or by compulsion even, you will have the effect. The only thing is we should take it, live up to that, and day to day we will progress. And one day we'll find the true home of our Father. God into expression has two aspects, light and sound. Music of the spheres and light. To come up to that, we require love. And truth is above all, but true living is still about truth. So our true living will safeguard us from losing that truth that we have got. And what is true living? Masters have been given this in their own way, from time to time. First thing is, we should observe truthfulness. What we mean, we should say. What we say, we must mean that. Our hearts and tongues and the brain all agree with what we give vent to. This is what we call truthfulness. Simply you will find we have no control over our words of mouth which go to express what lies in the heart of our hearts. the two things should agree, what is your heart and what you're giving out to your tongue. If those two agree, then there's one thing to test the usefulness of the truth, what you utter. If your truth goes to harm anyone, well, only say that much what is required, so that may not harm anybody else. Don't do the work of the unpaid apprentices of the CID of God. Don't carry tales. If somebody tells you something, mind your own business. What you're after really, you're really after to know God and just adopt certain ways which go to help you on the way. If you see something wrong somewhere, you just point out to him privately, heart to heart. Not broadcast it like anything. If two friends is one who sees other to be on the right path, but there are ways and ways to travel. As I told you, in the case of Father Abraham, I read his life story, and it is given, he never spoke lies, but told half-truths. By half-truths you mean only that much part of the truth which does not go to harm anyone. This is one thing very important. If your heart and tongue and brain is the testing, your intellect is to test whether what you express that goes to the benefit of others or harm others. If that is going to harm others, then don't speak. Then you wait. Better set right than in there. So as I told you before, like the unpaid apprentices of the CID God of God, don't work. That creates much trouble first within your own hearts, because you have got those things which you don't need in your own way. Those things go to stand in your own way, in your own progress. The first thing is, we must be true to our own self. What we think at heart, we must give out. But before give it out, think twice. What are you going to say? What would be the result of that? Then you use your intellect there. And the only criterion is, not to give out anything which goes to harm others. This is the first thing. Then comes next. Next is humility. Humility, you see, water stays in a place which is low. Water may be raining torrents in cats and dogs that would not stay on a steep place. That means all good will reside in a heart which is just lowly. Who are weak. So humility, Saint was asked Pythagoras, well, what is the way back to God? And he said, first, humility. Second, humility. And third, humility. Well, when you are humble, you learn something. When you know everything, Naturally, you are just stuck fast in your own self-assumed ignorance. It may be taken as truth, but that may be wrong. Just you have taken something, but that's good. If you hear somebody else is there who knows better, go to him and hear him. At least that much, whatever you know already. If you hear him, just what you have, he already in your mind, that will be confirmed. If he has to say anything more, you can grasp it. So you'll find many of the people do not have more truth because they are just in their own egotism. They consider they are right and that may be wrong, you see. So only such a man can go to somebody when he is humble. Even if he goes to somebody there also, what he knows, listen what he says. Sometimes you simply, we know already this one, this is no duty. Just listen, he might have to say something new. Whatever tumbler, you see, glass is put on the tumbler of water, that will be filled. If the glass is kept above the tumbler of water, that won't be filled in. Even if you have just progressed on the way, you have known the truth, you still become true humble. When a tree, fruit-laden tree, is just laden with fruit, all branches bow down to the earth, you will find the saints who have become conscious co-workers of the divine plan, they are truly humble because they see it is He doing, not I. So the second thing required is humility. And the third thing is just chastity is life and sexuality is death. Be chaste. Chastity opens the door of meditation. You have quicker results. Marriage does not mean unchaste life. What is lived according to what the scriptures say. The scriptures tell us marriage means taking up a companion in life. Who will be with you in the earthly sojourn? You should help each other to know God, which is the ultimate goal of a man's body, which we are having, fortunately. One duty may be of getting children, not all. Try to adjust your life according to the scriptures. And for that, what Christ said, you love your wives as Christ loved the church. They are taking companions, you see, in the earthly sojourn for very some higher purpose. So chastity is the ground on which the building of spirituality can be raised. First of all, that those who are chaste, they have got their body built, brain, everything built on that. So just your mind, consider, try to live up to what the scriptures say, you see. These are the three things. If you just observe them, he says, if you don't, Tulsi says, if you don't reach God, well, be rest assured, I am your surety. You will, you must. So for that you'll find we have to attain to Godhood. God and Godhood are not two things. God absolute is there, which cannot be seen at any time. God into action can be seen, can be contacted. And the expression of God in action power, which is called world or nam, are light and sound. To come in contact with that is coming in contact with the truth. They are dialectic leaves. If you just come in contact, they will take you to the ultimate goal for which those things emanated. So fortunate are those who have been just put on the way by having a lift above this iron curtain of the physical body. We have to dwell that by day to day. But for that, something is very important, you see. Purity of life. Purity of life, that has so many aspects. First is the purity of the body. Body is the temple of God, true temple of God. Outer temples raised by the people are made of the image of the man's body. And they are models. The light of God and the wife of God is already within your body. You can hear that. You can see that. Christ said to his disciples, "Blessed are you that you see things what the old prophets and the righteous men could not see. You hear things what the old prophets and the righteous men could not hear." So there are seals, our eyes and the ears are sealed. With the grace of God in the Master, if those seals are broken, you have got some experience of seeing and hearing, then we have to take heed. We should keep this man body, which is the true temple of God. In this man body only you can have an experience of the same. So if you keep the outer temples raised by man, by the hand of man, we keep them so clean and tidy, why should we not keep the man body, which is the true temple of God, in which God resides? Why should we not keep it clean? For keeping clean, there are two ways. First is just cleanliness is next to godliness. Keep your body clean. It is the true temple of God. And also don't put in anything into it which goes to defile the body. So for that you'll find we have something to eat. And for that the first thing is required is true livelihood earned by hard dint of labor, by the sweat of brow, in which there is no dishonesty. You have been true to your work. Work is worship. And then further, whatever kind of food you take, that should be helping. We do not go to flare of passions within you, which is digestible. You find generally fruits, vegetables, grains, milk, and any products thereof. So all masters came and advised, even Christ advised that. If you read the Athenian John, Gospel of John, you'll find it there. Whom you cannot give life, don't take their life. Fruits, vegetables, and milk and grains I give you for meat. These are the exact wording. All other masters have to say the same thing. So first, our livelihood should be earned by sweat of brow, honest earning, whether somebody is seeing you or not. The God in you must see to that. Two men went to a master. your master told them, well, look here, what for you have come? They said, we have come to just know God. All right. He gave them two pigeons, one to each, and told them, all right, go and kill them where nobody sees you. One man was very clever. He went out behind the wall and killed and came back within a few minutes. And the other man, poor fellow, was tossing about from place to place. He could not find any place where nobody was seen. In the evening, he returned. He said, Master, I have not found any place where nobody was seen. And they, who was seeing you? And then the very pigeon was seeing at me. So, by that, we should be seeing that our God power, you see, when a man is initiated, that God power resides with the initiate. Watch his every action. Our master used to say, if a child of 5 years is sitting, you do not do anything wrong in front of him. You want secrecy. When you think that God is, that God power is already residing in you, how can you commit any sin? And the last thing is, whatever you brought for your eating, the hands through which these things pass, those should be also pure thoughts. Because little things charge those things which pass to such like people who are unchaste. And I read in scripture, probably the unchaste thoughts are like dogs. So, earning should be pure, honest earning, and the quality of the food you take, that also should be clean, and to the hands to which these things pass, those also should be clean. A pure heart, because everything is large, you see, whatever thought just reverberates in your mind, you have got charging like that. Why don't you feel? That's the point. We do not feel because already so much filth in us, say in tons. If a man, or say even a seer, you see, kilometers added to it, what difference does it make? Though you are pure in hearts, even little ounces will affect you. So see, honest earning, the quality of the food and the hand through which these things pass should be pure. First two things are, I think, for those who earn and bring things from outside. And the second part is those who cook, who prepare the dishes. They should prepare with very noble thoughts of God, and love for all, with no anger, with no enmity, nothing of the sort. Then last will come good character. So these are the things required which go to defile. Anything we eat, if your hearts are pure, you feel it, little thing will affect you. So we have to take for that reason, first the bodily, because in the temple of God, keep it clean. And also keep it clean from within by giving such like food that does not go to defile it. And also living a way which is pure. So blessed is that the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Even if you see a fish, even that is just in a river, maybe put in river, still its bad odor does not leave it. The water can cleanse your body. But unless your thoughts are pure, your mind is pure, your body cannot be pure. That's why I will give you an example. Every day morning, when you take a bath, or one day you do not take a bath, you feel bad odor in the body. That is due to the thoughts that cross your mind daily. Every thought has its own effect, its own order, its own color, my dear. I tell you, though you have got lusty thoughts, the other from your body will be like one, just as you have got something like that. Very bad order, every day morning you cleanse again, you find that bad order there. Though you are in anger and just resentful, are just what you think, always having something against somebody, the result is what? That affects your body. You'll feel, just smell their bodies, you'll find just like bad odor, just when the cloth is just burning. If you are very greedy, so much for eating this and that, everything too much voracious, you just smell his body, you'll feel the bad odor like a fish. So that this is different odor. If your hearts are pure, you've got only good thoughts coming in you, striking you. If you have love, thoughts of love, thoughts of spiritual heights, love for God. If you just smell his body, you'll smell the odor of just like jasmine. These are things are not given in the books, but this is how you feel. So the mind must be pure. Whose mind is not pure, however you cleanse your body, that will again give bad order. That is why you see we use so much toilet every day, again you see the bad out of it. So for that we have to keep our thoughts clean. If such a man body is there, you'll find the good ground for the God to manifest. Tulsi says, tell us, just cleanse your heart, your mind. And what is that cleansing of the mind? Let no thought other than God strike there. Even if you are living in the world, you are living amongst your children, your families, your friends, just the needle of your compass should be towards God. It is God you have given. It is God residing in them. Always when you think all men are alike, they have got the same privilege from God, born the same way, in the same body souls they are, and the very God's power is controlling them in the body. They are the bodies of the temples, two temples of God. Then naturally you will have respect for all. So this is the purity required for being able to progress from day to day. And then comes last of all, is selfless service. Love for all. Love for God. Love with all others. This is what all masters say, you see. Kabir says so, Guru Nanak says so. Peace be unto all the world over and under thy will, O God. Right says so, love God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. And love thy neighbor as thyself. So we have to love God and love those service and sacrifice. Love those giving, sharing with others. Even sometimes you'll sacrifice your own interests for the sake of others. They're going to expand yourself. If need be, you sacrifice your own life for the sake of others. Man is truly one who lives for the sake of others. The animals do live for their own selves, they do love their children. What is the difference between a man and an animal? This is the only difference. A man lives for others too, he should share with others.
Good evening, and welcome to the Satsang of Master Kripal Singh. The recording that was just played was the first half of the talk titled Instructions to New Initiates, given by Master on 11th December 1963 at Basis Hall, Hollywood, California. Our reader this evening is David Halliburton. Hello, David.
Hi, Pradeep.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to be reading a talk by Master called The Purpose of Human Life. It was a talk given at Salman Ashram in Hindi, and it was published in English in the March 1968 issue of Sat Sandesh. Man is in search of happiness, but has no peace of mind. Even if he succeeds in achieving his objectives, he remains dissatisfied. His search for peace and happiness, therefore, never ends. Saint Augustine says that God gave us the senses for using them properly, but we misuse them by indulging in sensual pleasures, whereas the bliss for which we should have striven remains enshrined in scriptures only. Man is an ensouled entity, gifted with body, mind, and intellect. He takes good care of his body for the sake of his domestic, social, and political well-being. Intellectually, he has made strident advances. He has successfully explored the earth, oceans, and space, and has made atomic bombs. A single atom bomb can destroy millions. Strangely enough, with all his achievements, he remains ignorant about the prime source of energy from which his body and mind derive their strength, soul, his true self. He has so much identified himself with the body that he is unable to distinguish his soul from the body. In fact, he does not know that his real self is something separate from the body. Have we ever thought about the propelling force in us? Have we recognized the indweller of the house? Soul is a conscious entity. Just as any essence has its basic source, soul too has an ultimate source, the oversoul, a vast ocean of all consciousness. The entire universe is his manifestation. The soul is identified with the material body by constant association with the senses. Man does not know that he can have true happiness only when he is able to disfranchise the self in him from the outer vestures. He is so much entangled with the mind and body that he ever remains unhappy and restless. Soul, being conscious, and body being material, these cannot coexist amiably. We pretend to be religious by reading the scriptures without knowing their true import, and by offering ceremonial prayers at the places of worship. All that we worship is physical health and worldly riches. We aspire for material well-being and not for God realization. It is said that once Majnu, a legendary lover, was told that God wished to see him. Majnu replied that if that was so, God must come in the form of Layla, his beloved. Most of us offer our prayers to God only because we want to fulfill our worldly ambitions. We seek God's blessings to become physical and intellectual giants. Thus, to us, God is only a means to worldly ends. Consequently, we get only what we crave for, that is, the material world and not God. To know God, we must first know ourselves. From time immemorial, many have tried to define God philosophically, but he remains undefined as ever. God cannot be realized by the body or intellect or senses. He can only be experienced by the soul. Unless we know ourselves, the question of knowing God does not arise. Thus, the first step in this direction is self-knowledge, which precedes God-knowledge. Know thyself has been the call of saints and sages. Guru Nanak was once asked by a Muslim holy man to define his faith. The guru replied that he neither claimed to be a Hindu nor a Muslim in the ordinary sense. He explained that his body was composed of five elements, ether, earth, fire, water, and air, and the God power was pulsating in him. Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji was once asked as to which religion he belonged. He replied, "If God is a Hindu, I am a Hindu. If he is Sikh, I am Sikh. If he is Muslim, I am a Muslim. If he is a Christian, then I am a Christian." All religions are man-made. God has not put a stamp of religion on anyone. To know the controlling power of the universe, it is inevitable and essential to know thyself. Guru Nanak has also said, "Until and unless one analyzes oneself, it is not possible to shed delusion and realize the reality. Unless your third eye is opened, you cannot realize God." How various saints have solved the mystery of life is the subject for today. The fact is that truth is one, but the ways of expression may be different. Our ideal is truth. Let us see what Swamiji has to say on the subject. Link your soul with Nam. We are advised to connect our soul with the Word. It implies that our attention is presently linked with something other than the Word. What is meant by attention? It is consciousness, a state of awakening or awareness. We may call it attention, spirit, or soul. It is this life current emanating from our self or soul, which acts as a driving force within us. Swamiji asks us to link this current with the Word. Now, where is the source of these currents? It is at the seat of the soul between the two eyebrows. What happens at the time of death? Life withdraws from the feet and rises to the back of the eyes. The power which is concentrated behind the eyes is our real self. After that power is withdrawn, the body is of no significance. This is the most important and mostly ignored subject. In order to probe further into the subject, one has to realize that soul is an entity distinct from the body. We have to learn and practice to withdraw the soul currents from lower centers of the body to the eye focus. This process is similar to the one undergone by the soul at the time of one's physical death. We have to rise above body consciousness. The theoretical knowledge of this process is not enough. Practice is far more important. An ounce of practice is more than tons of theory. So we have to link our soul with the Word. Let us now consider what the word, Nam, signifies. The word has two aspects. One is an epithet, and the other is that ultimate power to which the epithet refers. For example, water itself is one thing, but it is referred to by many names. For example, water, aqua, H2O, etc. Similarly, truth is one, but sages have described it in various ways. Guru Nanak says, "I want to sacrifice myself on all thy names, O Lord." Guru Gobind Singh, the 10th Sikh Guru, compiled hundreds of names of God in his work, Jap Sahib. These names are in addition to those already mentioned in the various scriptures. Despite hundreds of names, God is one. Similarly, there are many religions, but their goal is one. We have to understand the God power with the help of spoken names. This is our first step. Though the name is not different from the named, yet it seems so until the named is actually contacted. A person tastes a mango and declares that it is sweet, but one who has neither seen a mango nor tasted sugar cannot know how sweet it is. Thus, to realize God is of utmost importance. We have to make a beginning with spoken names. It is unfortunate that people quarrel over the different names of God as given by the founders of the various religions. All the names refer to the Supreme Lord, and as such, they all deserve our respect. The real thing is the power of God to which these names refer. That power is eternal truth. It is one, will ever remain one, and is called Nam, or the Word. The Word is the source of the entire creation, and can be experienced only with the help of a Satguru, a true master. Guru Nanak has explained this point lucidly in the Japji. Whatever has come into being is the creation of the Word. The Word is the power that exists in the minutest speck in the universe. That is the divine link that connects the body with the soul. When this link breaks, it brings about physical death. It is the same link which sustains the universe and higher spiritual planes. When this divine link is withdrawn, there is total dissolution. Now the question arises, if we are connected with the divine link, which is the point in the body, which is the point in the body at which the two meet. Guru Nanak tells us that the Word can be contacted after one transcends the six chakras, or ganglionic centers, and has reached the Agye chakra, behind and between the two eyebrows. The divine link can be established only there, and not anywhere in the body. Rishi Patanjali, as also other past masters, have explained this process. When one reaches the Agye chakra, after rising above the six lower chakras, one is connected with the celestial sound current, the Anhat sound, and merges into Sahasrar, the first spiritual plane. The Anhat sound is the divine link. It is the Word, or the divine power, which is manifested in every human being. This is the primary source of all existence. Nam, the word, says Gurbani, is invisible, unfathomable, limitless, and sweet beyond description. It has an everlasting divine intoxication and bliss. Whosoever experiences it forgets all worldly pleasures. The soul is a drop of the ocean of all consciousness, but is covered by numerous sheaths of body, mind, and senses. So long as a man is engrossed in the material world, he remains unaware of the divine Nam within him. What does the Nam signify? According to Gurbani, communion with Nam opens within a grand vista of divine light, the light of God. Nam also refers to the sound principle, the sound of unabounding joy. Thus, there are two expressions of Nam, the God power, light, and sound. In the Vedas, Nam has been described as Udgit, or Nad, music of the beyond. According to the Vedas, Nad has created 14 spheres. Muslim sages call it the Kalma. They also believe that the Kalma has created 14 tabaks. Maulana Rumi once prayed, "O God, lead me to the place where conversation goes on without words." Christ says, "In the beginning was the Word. Word was with God, and Word was God." The Gurbani says, "Nam has created the earth and the heaven. All light has emanated from Nam. All creation has come into being from Nam, which is resounding in all human beings." The Word was therefore even before the universe came into being. The Word is thus the source of all creation. Saints of all the religions have expressed parallel thoughts on the subject. The Gurbani states, "The Word has been the source of salvation to human beings during all the four yugas." God is wordless, nameless, and beyond description. When He came into being, it was called Nam, the Word, the light sound principle. One who communes with Nam is able to establish a contact with God. Hafiz Sahib, a great Persian mystic poet, says, "No one knows the abode of the beloved, but it is certain that sound of bells comes from there." If you follow the strain of sound, you will reach its source. Thus, the Word, light and sound, is the safest means to the end, the way back to God. To get in contact with the divine light, one has to rise above body consciousness by self-analysis. Only then a contact with the divine sound is possible. By contacting Nam, one gets peace and eternal bliss. Again from the Gurbani, "Blessed are they who are linked with the Word, O Nanak. Whosoever listens to the eternal music attains salvation." People generally get lost in various names of God. The whole world talks of Nam, but there are only a few who know the real significance of Nam. It is a practical subject. Unless we realize ourselves by rising above body consciousness, soul cannot establish a contact with the Oversoul. We have, therefore, to link our soul with Nam. from the Japji, we have, those who have communed with the word, their toils shall end. Not only shall they have salvation, O Nanak, but many more shall find freedom with them. Again, we have in the Gurbani, a Gurumukh, beloved of the Master, can liberate millions of souls by imparting just a particle of his life impulse. Emerson says, the keynote to success is one's own thoughts. To make a mark in any walk of life, you have to concentrate your attention on that particular aspect. Similarly, if you concentrate your attention on over-self, you will become spiritually great. Bulle Shah, a Muslim saint, inquired from his spiritual guide as to how one could find God. The guide replied, it is as easy as withdrawing the attention from here, the world, and connecting it there, the word. Our very self is our attention. We are soul and not the body, but we are engrossed in our bodies. Swamiji tells us, let any one of us connect his attention with the word. This body and wealth will not be of any help when confronted with the negative power. The human body is the soul's first companion. It comes first with the soul when the child is born. But even this companion leaves us at the time of death, not to mention other worldly associations acquired by us. Our own being, having constant attachment with the physical world, has fallen to the latter's level. As a result, we have to come to this mortal world again and again. Gurbani says, soul goes where there is attachment. If we are able to analyze the self in our lifetime and learn to rise above body consciousness by getting a higher contact with Nam, we experience such a bliss as to forget all worldly pleasures and attachments. Gurbani states, worldly pleasures are nowhere before the divine bliss. And also, that is why saints have taught, O friend, give up the insipid sensual pleasures and drink the sweet elixir of Nam. When one gets a taste of a real bliss, the pleasures become insipid. The real bliss is either within our inner being or in Nam, God into action power, since soul is its essence. Soul is a spark of the divine essence. It is bliss in itself, and it is a conscious entity. It is the soul which is the source of all bliss, and not the body and worldly things. Saints have warned us that worldly objects in which our attention is engrossed are not going to be of real help to us. Not only that all these worldly objects will stay back at the time of death, but their constant attachment will bring the soul back again and again to this world. What does it profit a man to gain the possession of the whole world and to lose one's own soul? The soul resides in this house, this body. It has to go out of this mortal frame, leaving everything behind. When the time comes to vacate this body, one is greatly distressed because of man's attachment with the body. Repenting, then, is of no avail. If during one's lifetime the soul establishes a contact with the beyond, it attains perfect peace. But we never think of the world beyond. We generally follow the maxim, eat, drink, and be merry. If someone reminds us of death, we just ignore it by saying that we will face it when it comes. This is not a wise approach. If a pigeon closes its eyes at the sight of a cat, the cat is not going to spare it. Everyone has to leave the body. There is no exception to the rule. From the Gurbani, emperors or kings, rich or poor, all have but to go in their turn. We all have to go, but we do not know when. We should be prepared for the change. Are we? From the Gurbani again, everyone is scared of death and wishes to live till eternity. With the Guru's grace, if one learns to die while alive, one can become a conscious co-worker of the Lord. Whosoever so dies gets salvation. If you learn to die by rising above body consciousness, you will attain life everlasting. All saints tell us that God has bestowed us with three forms: physical, astral, and supramental or causal. We are already active at the physical plane, or pinned, through the senses. After leaving the physical body, the soul acquires the astral form. With the astral senses, it can traverse the astral plane, and similarly, after attaining supramental form, the soul can enter into the causal plane, the Brahman. It is beyond these three planes that the soul gets self-knowledge. It is only at that stage that you will be able to know who you really are. Swamiji says, this is the most opportune time to attain peaceful bliss by avoiding the fire of ceaseless desires. The world is being consumed by invisible flames of fire. Guru Nanak has prayed, this is the fire of desires that has spread all over. Although we are its victims, we are unable to perceive it. Only saints know the real magnitude of this fire. Yet only human life is capable of getting away from this blazing furnace. That is why human life is considered to be the crown of creation. But without sincere effort in the right direction, there can be no salvation. For instance, if we have to avoid scorching heat, we have to find shelter in an air-conditioned room. In our context, the air-conditioned room is within us. We shall have to withdraw from outside and enter into it to find blissful solace from all the miseries of the world. This is high time that we introvert ourselves. If we miss this God-given opportunity, we are no better than beasts. The human body has a worth so long as the soul dwells in it. We should make the most of it while it lasts. I'll stop there. It continues on beyond that. This was called The Purpose of Human Life. It was a talk given by Master at Sawan Ashram and published in the March 1968 issue of Satsandesh. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, David, for reading for us. 54 people attended this evening's satsang, and thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Be not deluded as we are now. We think perhaps this is the only place, this we will live here forever, but nobody has lived here forever. This is a golden opportunity we have got to find our way back to God.